Blog Talk Radio.
Host Merle Exit. It's 7 o'clock here in New York City. It's cold outside. I'm glad I'm inside, and it's dark. But in here, we're gonna have a good time because I'm gonna be drinking some wine. Thursday's show got screwed up. You ain't going to hear because I'm going to take it off the internet. It won't be on my archived. I don't know. There was some problem with the site, the Blog Talk Radio site. That was so weird. But anyway, rather than go into that. So I'm redoing the show tonight, but I'll still have another show on Thursday. So let's see, and we're going to be starting off Morgan McLaughlin from Finger Lakes Wine Country. Now, she called in on the show, and that seemed to have gotten through. So I ain't going to kid you. We taped it. I can't say we. My webmaster, Steve, is so good. We really wouldn't know how to do this. So Steve was able to pull it off, the old show, and we're going to hear it taped. And then we're going to hopefully, if things go well, no problem, we're going to have Rich Bergstrom from Ceramicore calling in regarding cookware called Extrema Cookware, and Maggie Mose from Simply Neutral. And this is in regards to a green products event that's going to be happening on February 25th that I'll be attending. And I've been trying some of the products to test out. And so these are just two of the products that we'll have interviews on this show. Then later on, Leslie Dock, New York Sharks player Leslie Dock, will talk about the JPD program that was held at Giant Stadium. So we're going to get it from the from her point of view of being a coach, of coaching this wonderful program. And so that on Thursday, I will have a woman named Taya Weiss, who's a part of a group called WAG, I think something like Wives and Girlfriends of the Giants. And she was there and did a whole taping and interviewing. And so we're going to have it like from her point of view, having interviewed a whole bunch of people. And so I'm going to go on, and I guess I can I'm going to actually probably take a break here while you guys get to hear a commercial that'll take us right into the interview.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. And you can still get the enrobed chocolate brownies for Valentine's Day. Go to www.brownies.com. And with that, we're going to now open up my mic because I have Morgan on the air.
Thanks
yeah.
for having me.
Did it get you hungry?
Oh, I'm a chocoholic.
It is really bad because being on Nutrisystem, I can't have the brownies for a long time. But maybe if I can, when I get now, I don't even want to request any right now. I would say I'd bring some up when I come up there, but I don't even want to get them myself. Anyway, so let's first talk about since this is not a local program. Everybody's going to know what the heck is the Finger Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the area first.
Well, the Finger Lakes is located in upstate New York, and I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with New York City, and we are a little northwest of New York City, about 4.5 hours.
Okay. And what composes, why are they called the Finger Lakes?
Well, there are 11 skinny lakes that are shaped like fingers on a hand. And when you look at the 11 lakes on a map, it looks like, you know, two hands with the extra digit. So, hence the name, the Finger Lakes.
Ah. And I gather it's there are a lot of wine growers in that area.
Yeah, we...
I'm tasting the wine, by the way.
The Finger Lakes...
If you hear smacks and things like that, you'll know. Smacking my lips. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, the Finger Lakes is the largest wine-producing region east of California, and we currently have over 100 wineries located around 3 of the main lakes. So not every... You know, even though there's 11 lakes, it's really only the 3 that have most of the wineries.
Ah, okay. Approximately how many are there, by the way?
Last count, about 106.
Can you? Can one actually go to all of 106 if they wanted to do wine tasting, like, you know, a week of wine tasting?
Well, we recommend that visitors do 4 to 5 a day. I have actually not heard of anyone doing all 106 in the same year.
Uh-huh.
Though there are people who have been to all of them, but it's taken a few years.
Oh, okay. So, in other words, would it be best, let's say, that you pick a lake, let's say one of the lakes, and then go around the lake to all the wineries in that particular lake, maybe like if you were up there for, let's say, a week.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like something to do?
Yeah, there's a couple ways you can approach the region because it is pretty big an area. One is what you just mentioned, to focus on one lake, and none of the lakes have bridges, so you do actually have to drive, you know, around the lakes.
Right.
Or another way of doing it is focusing on certain types of wineries.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a Riesling fan, you can visit the wineries that specialize in making Riesling. So, and there are Riesling producers on all 3 lakes. So,
like, let's get to first of all what kind of wines would one expect? I mean, if someone's hearing the type of wine that's being produced.
Well, the Finger Lakes has been producing wine for the last 20 years, 25 years. And there is quite the gamut of wine that's produced, anywhere from, you know, dry reds all the way to ice wines, you know, late harvest dessert wines. So I think as a region, we're kind of really known for having a real diversity of types of wines. In the last 10 years, there has been a real focus on Riesling as the leading white varietal. So a lot of wine publications and a lot of wine writers are really excited about the Rieslings coming from our region.
Why the Rieslings in particular? Just curious.
Yeah, well, the Riesling grapes like cooler climates versus mm-hmm. the warmer climates of California.
Oh, okay.
They also like slate soils, and we have a lot of slate soils up in the Finger Lakes. And our microclimate is just perfect for growing, you know, really good Rieslings that have, you know, nice acidity and have nicely balanced alcohol. So we just have the perfect climate.
So now, just for somebody who doesn't know anything about wine, I mean, mm-hmm. What does it mean when it have a Riesling versus a Chardonnay or versus any of the other? What does that actually mean?
Well, in the United States, wine labeling is a little bit different than it is in Europe, where in Europe it's all about a region. In the United States, it's all about the grape type or grape varietal. So when you see the word Riesling or Chardonnay or Merlot or Cabernet Sauvignon, those are the types of grapes. And for some people, it means kind of a certain flavor profile. But as you get more into wine, you start to realize that you can have the same grape, but the wine can taste very different from winery to winery, from region to region.
And why is that, by the way? I mean, why would you, you know? Yeah, I'm curious. Why is that? If, in other words, like if you're in one region and mm-hmm. you're going to have a Riesling in one winery, why would it taste different in another winery? What would make it taste different?
Well, there is, you know, the fact that each vineyard is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, maybe one site that's a little more sloped, another site that's a little more flat, maybe that gets more sun exposure. And then really what happens in the winery itself greatly influences the taste of wine. And some wines go into oak barrels, some do not. Some have residual sugar, you know, to give a wine some sweetness. Other wines are fermented dry. So it really comes down to each winery having its own identity and the kind of flavors it wants to produce.
Mm-hmm.
So
in other words, and just like if would one winery, let's say, ferment a Riesling in a barrel, in an oak barrel, while another one in, what is it, steel? What do you call that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stainless steel.
Yeah.
And actually, Riesling is not a good example on that because
okay.
Rieslings are always done in stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
What you'll see in the difference in Riesling is if winemakers leave what's called residual sugar in the wine. So Riesling can run the gamut of being dry, which means no sugar, all the way to late harvest style, where there is a lot of sweetness. Chardonnay is actually the best example of a wine varietal that some wineries do in oak barrels, and now the current trend is to do Chardonnay in stainless steel. And a lot of people may be noticing wine labels talking about un-oaked Chardonnay or even naked Chardonnays, and that's just referring to the non-use of oak.
Versus the grapes that have clothes on.
Right.
Okay. So.
Yeah, and oak being the clothes.
Okay. So, for instance, by the way, if it sounds like, if I start getting a little drunker as I'm speaking,
you're having some tasty
wine. You'll understand. It's, I get drunk on scotch tape. It's really And it's interesting with the Riesling that I'm downing, well, I'm tasting. Because in terms of dry, yeah, because it's labeled dry, and yet I don't really get that really dry taste. I still, there was still some sweetness to it, but I wouldn't call it sweet. Sometimes I've had like a sweet Riesling, which is definitely sweeter, but I don't get that taste of like it's too dry. It still has some sweetness to it. And why is that, by the way?
Well, because it has what's called fruitiness.
Okay.
And fruitiness is just a characteristic of grapes, and you can have fruitiness that tastes like sweetness, but it isn't. So it's a separate component than sugar, but it does have a perception on your tongue as being sweet. So you're spot on that you can have a dry wine that's labeled dry, but doesn't come off as being overly astringent or too tart.
Right. Actually, this is and the way I would describe this wine is I don't find it that it irritates the back of my throat, and I don't know why. What does that with the wine? It doesn't have that heavy alcohol thing that, you know what I'm saying? That and this one goes down extremely smooth. It's from I think Cayuga. Is that and that's I think it's a 2007 from Cayuga. And it does. It just goes down very smooth. I mean, I like the taste of it. You know. So now, but I guess I also now I've learned that just because that I do that if I have a dry Riesling from some other winery that I shouldn't expect it to taste the same, or or a different year could taste different as well.
Oh yes, and the year in which the grape was grown is very important in terms of taste. So you're right on that. Every year wines will taste different, and they can taste different from each producer, even when it's the same grape that's supposed to be dry. That makes wine tasting so fun because you've got to taste everything.
Oh, sure. Do they have do wineries have like any wineries that have restaurants as part of it?
Yes, there are quite a few wineries that are opening or have opened restaurants. One of the most famous, well, there's two real popular ones. One is the Inn at Glenora, and the Inn at Glenora has an inn. Glenora? Glenora.
Oh, okay.
And they're located on the western side of Seneca Lake, which is the largest of the Finger Lakes. And this is a 30-room inn. It's one of the original wineries in the Finger Lakes. They've been producing for two decades. And they have a really fabulous restaurant. They have a new chef who came from Connecticut, and they are focusing on regional cuisine and then also the wine pairing component. So that's a leading one. And another winery called Red Newt, that's on the opposite side of the lake. And they have...
Also Seneca Lake?
East side of Seneca. And it's a husband and wife team. The husband, Dave, is the winemaker, and his wife, Deb, she's the chef. And they do a really outstanding job as well.
And do they also focus on local cuisine?
Yes. Deb is actually one of the leading proponents of the use of local foods. She's also a founding member of an organization called Finger Lakes Culinary Bounty, which promotes the use of local produce and local meats by local restaurants. So It's a big movement in the Finger Lakes, the use of local foods.
So, but I guess it would depend on the time of year.
Oh, of course.
You know, of what you can get, because of, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't imagine, let's say now, that they're using lettuce from
right.
any place.
No, it's in the winter, it's a lot of root vegetables, a lot of meats. We have a lot of free-range meats, organically raised, a lot of cheeses.
So you have, so in other words, in the area there are, you also have milk farms, cheese farms?
Mm-hmm. It's very, I don't want to say it's very rural, but it is pretty rural. There's lots of farms that dot the landscape in between the vineyards. It's not just vineyards.
Right.
And when you come to the area, you very much see the importance of the agricultural industry up here, and a lot of people are farmers and a lot of Mennonites, so you see a lot of a lot of farms that are owned by Mennonite families.
Now, when you say with the meat, you don't have any cattle up there, do you?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you do.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, cattle and pig, lots of eggs. You name it, we grow it or raise it in the Finger Lakes.
All right. Well, when I'm probably coming up there next month.
That's great.
To Seneca Falls.
Mm-hmm.
For Women's History Month,
mm-hmm.
or should I call it Women's Herstory Month? So I'll have the opportunity. Now, as far as the Finger Lakes, now as far as the wineries, suppose I said, because not knowing the area, can you recommend, let's say, 5 wineries that are a must to go?
Well, again, it comes back to personal preference. If I said these are my 5 favorite, they may not be your 5 favorite.
Okay.
So we, on our website, have developed a database that allows a user or a visitor to go onto the site and kind of put in things that are important to him or her.
Right.
So whether it's having a restaurant on site, whether it's finding wineries that make Riesling or that make Chardonnay, or if you like sweeter wines, you can put in a category for sweet white, and then a list of producers will come up.
Now, so in other words, do you have, let's say, what are the most popular ones that people go to, just offhand?
Yeah, there's, on Seneca Lake, there is Glenora, again, that's popular.
Mm-hmm.
Lakewood, Hazlitt, 1852 Vineyards. They're on the east side of Seneca Lake. And then on Keuka Lake, which is to the west of Seneca, a lot of people are familiar with Dr. Frank, Dr. Constantine Frank. He's the one who brought Riesling to the Finger Lakes. Bully Hill, that's another popular winery. And then on Cayuga Lake, which is east of Seneca, there's a winery called Sheldrake that's popular. Hosmer is another popular one.
Now, because they have a winery doesn't necessarily mean that you can go, that it's open to the public. Am I correct in that?
Actually, the Finger Lakes is a little bit different from other wine-producing regions in that all of our wineries are open to the public.
Oh, they are?
Yeah. There are no wineries that are closed to the general public. We are very much a region that embraces tourism and travelers, and all of them are open at least some point of the year. Some wineries are seasonal and do close down in the winter,
mm-hmm.
but... and some may restrict buses, but every winery has a tasting room and loves for people to come through. So,
Well, that's good. I mean, although I'm not going to hit too many when I'm up there. Now, I assume there's like other attractions or other things to do in the wine country area.
Oh, of course, and I think that is always nice after you've spent a couple of days wine tasting to do something else and to let your tongue dry out a little bit.
Yeah. and your brain.
One of the most famous museums actually is located in wine country, and that's the Corning Museum of Glass. And that's located in Corning, which also happens to be the corporate headquarters for Corning Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
And the Corning Museum of Glass has, believe it or not, 45,000 years of glass art. It's one of the most extensive glass collections in the world. It is a spectacular facility. And what makes this museum really fun is that there's a lot of interactive experiences. You can make your own glass flowers, glass ornaments. You can see glass being made by glass blowers. So it's not just seeing glass on shelves.
Where is it in relation to Seneca Falls, the town?
Seneca Falls is at the northern part of Seneca Lake. So Corning is about an hour from Seneca Falls.
Okay.
I mean, not too far. It's an easy drive, and it's, you know, a beautiful drive along the lake.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
What other, I know what I wanted to ask you about. Grape pie.
Oh, grape pie, yes. I had never had grape pie until I moved up here, and we're known for grape pies. And Naples actually has a grape pie festival in the fall, and it's what it is. It's grapes in a pie.
What, you talking about Naples, Italy?
Naples, New York.
Oh, Naples, New York. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Now, do they have a contest to see who does the best grape pie?
I think they do, actually. It's a weekend full of all kinds of grape pie stuff.
And you said it's in the fall that
yes.
they do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they do this, like when they're making the grape pie, are the competitors like using, they're competing by using different grapes? Or is there a particular recipe for grape pie that people kind of go along with?
That's a good question. I'm sure there are variations in recipes, but it's, you know, kind of like apple pie, that you have real basic ingredients and you can vary the kind of grape, but it's always a red grape. And then, you know, if people have a secret ingredient, then that can be added, but it's pretty basic. Just
now, like when you've eaten it, like so when you have it, like do you get a different taste if somebody's using a Chardonnay grape? Is that what it is? Like,
well, they don't use Chardonnay grape. I think mostly Concords are used. I haven't had too many grape pies. They've all kind of tasted similar to me.
Oh, okay. So in other words, they're kind of using a sweet grape to do the pie.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah. And basically, what else is in there besides grapes?
That's a good question. I think it's just grapes.
I'll have to go online and look to see what a basic recipe is.
I've never actually made a grape pie, so I'm probably not a good person to ask.
Do the restaurants compete? Is that what they do? The restaurants compete, or just or other people as well?
No, I think it's just kind of consumers.
Oh, it's the consumers, so they're trying to come up with the best one.
Yes.
Okay, because it's not like the wineries are competing.
Right. No. Mm-mm.
Or the chefs from restaurants. So it's for the public to come up with their best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so they're not. In other words, let's say. So in other words, the public is like, now, can the public go to these wineries and say, can I have a pound of grapes? They can't do that, can they? I mean, where they...
Actually, there are vineyards that have pick-your-own grapes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, pick-your-own strawberries.
Right, or pick-your-own nose.
Right.
They told you I'm a comedian, didn't they?
You are good.
Okay,
you are funny.
Warped, yeah.
Yeah, you can do pick-your-own, or there's lots of farm stands where you can buy grapes. Now, you have to remember that there are different kinds of grapes, and the grape we're talking about right now, the Concord, is good for eating, but not good for wine. So wine grapes like Chardonnay and Riesling aren't grapes that you're going to be eating for a snack.
Okay. So now, what's the website that we can go to get all the info?
All the info can be found at fingerlakeswinecountry.com.
Okay.
And then for that database that I had mentioned about searching the different kinds of wineries, you just go into the database section and you'll see the ability to search by type of wine.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much for calling in, and I'll be getting back on this when I get up to Seneca Falls.
Great.
And then
wine.
We'll talk a little bit about, then I'll do some tasting myself, whatever I'm allowed to on Nutrisystem. So I'm sure I'll go off for the day or the week or whatever.
Well, are you able to have a grape pie now, or?
No, it's not a Nutrisystem food, but
okay.
I'm going to, it'll be part of my article, I guess, to see what happens when I'm on a press trip.
Right. As I said, I could send you down a grape pie, but maybe you should wait until.
Oh, no, do that.
Okay.
Send me, you know what I want? Not just a grape pie, but I want to taste, everybody said, to ask for an ice wine.
Oh, I can get you an ice wine and a grape pie.
Okay. Yeah, because I think when I was in, that's what I was asking about with Naples, because I went to Italy last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Naples. And so we were doing some, of course, some wines and stuff, and I had some ice wine. And I said, oh, okay, I'd be curious to see. Because I wanted, I'm trying to kind of promote regional wines, not just California. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Oh, we truly appreciate it.
Yeah, so I'm going to do my best.
Well, I'll get you a bottle of New York-produced ice wine that's some of the best in the world. So.
Okay, and the grape pie.
And the grape pie.
Okay, thank you so much, Morgan, and maybe I guess I'll probably see you when I come up there.
You will. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Have a good evening.
Bye.
Bye.
That's put me on. Yep. Okay. So we heard all about the Finger Lakes, and now we're ready to go into the live portion of the show. Yeah. Alive, oh. And so it's time to talk about one of our products, and you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
It worked.
Yes, it's working this time. Now you'll have to repeat everything you said last time. That's okay. I'm sure you know it all.
No, I don't even claim to. But, yeah, you'll just have to refresh my memory. I'm always talking about our products.
Yeah. So introduce yourself to my audience.
Okay, I am Maggie Mose, co-owner of Simply Neutral. We create a line of non-toxic hypoallergenic cleaning products that are sustainably packaged. And the reason they were developed was because I was cleaning homes and I became allergic to the conventional cleaning products I was using. But of course, like most mothers in the world, I didn't realize that was the problem until I started researching my daughter's asthma triggers and I ran across indoor air pollution. So that was how Simply Neutral was developed.
Oh, cool. And you're not going to tell me exactly what's in the product, but basically what's in the product.
Yes, no problem. It is a surfactant, and all a surfactant is that it's a chemical that actually raises the dirt up from the surface. So it's a surfactant derived of corn sugar and palm kernel oil. And then in our all-purpose cleaner, we add essential oils, and tea tree and citrus is the essential oil combination. And, of course, tea tree in the essential oil world is known as a disinfectant. So that always helps also. And that's it in water.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I got it was a 32-ounce container. And how many ounces of
It's 4.85 ounces of concentrate.
Okay. And what is the ratio to water? How much you're putting in?
Okay, you're putting in 3/4 ounce into the bottle of the concentrate, and then you fill the bottle up to the bottom of the neck of the bottle with water from your own tap.
And do you have to like use it up like right away?
No, not at all. It should have a shelf life of at least a year. Unless, of course, there's something wrong with a person's water, such as bacteria in the water or something, and that would be a water contamination issue. But we have not heard from any of our clients that it has been an issue at all.
Yeah.
And that way we're not shipping water, so we're cutting back on our global footprint in the shipping.
So what can you use it on?
Well, you can use the all-purpose cleaner on everything. My husband actually washes the outside of our vehicles in our camper using a couple caps of the concentrate in a bucket with his brush and the hose outside. I even clean my wood furniture with it. So it has, you know, my sister-in-law, who is not my business partner, but one of our other sister-in-laws, she actually uses the all-purpose all over her house. And I say, well, why don't you use the glass cleaner? And she says, well, if I see a streak from the oils, I just rub it a couple of extra times. So really it's safe to use on any surface, and that's what's nice about it.
And, like, okay, how... in terms of what it gets off, how much grime or how much dirt or what kind of dirt or...
Well, the thing that's really nice is I feel that it cuts through grease really well, and at the other end of the spectrum, it cuts through dirt really well also. But let's say that you have... So if you have a soiled... bathtub or something, you could certainly get through it with a little bit of elbow grease if it's really awful, or you could just sprinkle in a little bit of our non-abrasive powder and just cut right through that. I like to tell people with all-purpose cleaner, this is not a chemical per se. This is not the toxic cleaner that you're used to using where you spray it and you can immediately wipe it. Just give it a second and let it start working. So spray, let it set for a second, and then start working. It's not the works or anything.
Right. That the scouring agent. I mean, where you make the paste from.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of like a sort of. What's the cleaner? The common
it's
name.
It's like Ajax or Comet.
Yeah. That. Yeah. Right.
Herbonomy.
Yeah. But you would kind of use that, would you use that on your counter? Would you use that, or you just basically, is that something that you would use, let's say, in the bathroom, on the sinks?
Okay, sure. I will use the powder virtually anywhere. And the nice part about it is that it is non-abrasive. Let's say that you have a spot on your counter that you cannot get off, or it's stained a little bit. You could sprinkle a little bit, but you're going to have to rinse it a little extra. You could also form a paste, and you could just sprinkle a little on a flat cooktop stove. You could sprinkle a little and spray it with the all-purpose, and it will remove any of that baked-on, crusted-on goo that's on your stove. And even on gas stoves, the porcelain grates that get so bad, you can even scrub those and it takes it off. So, and scuff marks on your floor that you can't get up.
Right.
But otherwise, you know, and it's even safe to use on stainless steel. It doesn't scratch. But you just have to remember that it's a powder, and it will have to be rinsed, or you'll have to take and rinse your cloth a couple times and go back to the area that you're cleaning.
Yeah, I already tried that on my counter, and I was like, there's still grit on the counter.
Yeah. But I bet it did a really good cleaning job.
Oh, yeah, it did. That's for sure. I went, oh, good. Oh, all right. It's interesting. I had recently gotten a steam cleaner, you know, to clean up on the linoleum.
Yes.
And as I look at that, I thought, I have to tell you that I can't tell you how long it's been since I cleaned the linoleum in
okay.
the kitchen.
Well, that's
and
very honest. Okay.
So it really got things up, but I don't see it. But see, the idea is not to keep steam cleaning it all the time. But now with this kind of, with the cleaner you have, it's something to use like easily. In other words, so you know what I'm saying? So I don't need to have before there's a buildup, before I have to deal with the buildup to need the steam.
Yes.
So this is a great, like, and I guess I want to call it an everyday cleaner that you have. That really works well. That I would use that on the linoleum afterwards.
Right. Just to spot clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you like recommend any kind of cloth or something to clean it with? I don't know. It's like the in thing now is the fiber cloth.
Yes.
So you think it makes a difference what kind of cloth that you're using when you're using your cleaners?
You know, I like the microfiber cloths. I think that they're nice. I prefer. I've worked with a microfiber company that I purchased some washcloths and a bigger microfiber towel with. Some of the claims that they make that they disinfect surfaces or sanitized surfaces, I don't really agree with that if you just use water. Because disinfectants, I mean, true disinfectants are registered pesticides typically, except for a couple, you know, Benefect and Pure Green 24. Benefect is an essential oil, EPA registered disinfectant, and Pure Green 24 uses the silver ion technology, and that also has a zero health rating, all that, so it's safe to use. But I would want to see studies where I saw that things were truly disinfected from using just a cloth with water. The thing that I tell people is we don't need to disinfect everything. I personally believe that has made viruses that are stronger and that stay and are not wiped out at that time. I think that it makes them stronger, and that's why we have the MRSA virus and more staph infections, things like that. So otherwise, I just use washable cloths. I think that, you know, it can be the towel that has gotten too bad to use in the kitchen anymore because it's stained and you don't want it out.
Right.
Reuse that until you can no longer use it, especially the flour sacks. They don't have the lint or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, I use the eco towels that we sell because they're really absorbent. I love using those on the windows and mirrors. But other than that, I am not a fan of anything in particular. I think I try to promote using something until it can no longer be used.
Yeah. It's like pants too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things, by the way, that I do find with the microfiber is like it's a very odd when I'm touching it. I don't know if you get this. It's like
yes.
Sometimes it feels like if I take it away, I'm looking into my fingers to see if there's like little cracks or something, because it sort of feels like it's like getting into the fingers, into, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think if your hands are dry at all, it's grabbing onto that, and I personally don't like that feeling.
Yeah.
Kind of like the fingers on chalkboard feeling, but.
Yeah. Well, yeah, okay. So, but now would you, I'm just curious, would you ever, like, use in the laundry? Would you ever put it in your laundry?
Would I put what in my
laundry? Your cleaner?
You know, we have been at shows before where people have come up to us and said, I just spilled my coffee on my shirt, and we'll hand them our cleaner and they'll spray their shirt and dab it dry and it will come off.
Really?
So it's something that you could, and you could use at different dilutions, but I don't know that it's necessarily the best surfactant for laundry purposes.
Okay. I should carry the 32-ounce bottle with me when I go to the restaurant, huh? Okay.
I guess you could. You could clean your area off and then spray your shirt when you spill.
Yes, in case I get food on my shirt, yeah. Except the great part about getting food on my shirt is I have some leftovers for later, or
that's
I can
true.
Remember what I ate. That's
yeah.
the only.
Yeah.
But, I don't have to worry about that. I always wear, I had gotten clips, like from the dental office kind of clips, you know,
yes.
when you put on it. And I take it and I put it on it, on the napkin. And then I put the napkin so the napkin hangs kind of like a bib.
Do you do that?
Yes, and I take clips with me. To the restaurants, every time I go out to a restaurant, so that I just take them out of the bag and my bag with me and clip the napkin. And of course, it's best when it's not a paper napkin. It works much better when it's a linen napkin. And I just, you know, keep it around me and I eat. And I'm so proud of myself when I get food on it.
Because you've just saved yourself some pre-treating.
Well, then what I'll have to do is I'll also bring the spray and see if I can get it off the linen towel.
Oh, no. That's funny.
But anyway, no, so this is really great. I'm going to, I guess I'll get to actually meet you at the Green Products event on the 25th, right?
Yes, that will be great.
Okay, and I'll bring some stains with me. How's that?
You bring some stains, you'll get another cleaning, a concentrate bottle combo if you want it. And
sure.
And then, we have our cookies with our logo on it. So
oh, good.
That will be fun. So make sure you stop by our booth. We're booth number 69. So.
Okay, great. It was great speaking with you, Maggie. You have a website? Let's get
we
that
sure
out
do.
There.
Hmm? Yes, our website is www.simplyneutral.com. And, of course, it's neutral, N-E-U-T-R-A-L. So
okay.
Please come visit our website.
Okay. Well, we got that out there. Thank you very much for calling in.
Yes.
And have a fabulous evening.
You too. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye. Yeah, that was Simply Neutral. Okay, well, I was going to take a break, but I ain't going to take a break because I want to talk about another product. Now we're going from cleaning to cooking, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
You certainly are, Rich.
How are you today?
Okay. So you wanted me to tell you all the questions I was going to ask you, huh?
Yes, I did.
Well, I have no idea, so let's begin.
Well, go ahead and shoot.
Hopefully I can answer them.
I'll
let you introduce yourself.
Okay, hi, everybody. My name is Rich Bergstrom. I am the founder and owner of Ceremcore. We are the only ceramics cookware company that I'm aware of that makes cookware that can go on top of the stove, very similar to the original Corningware back in the 1960s.
And so what makes this different from any other cookware?
The biggest thing, you know, I worked for Corning for 23 years, and we made probably the best ceramic cookware in the world. Excuse me, I'm battling the flu here. But what happened in the early 2000s is the World Kitchen ended up buying Corning, and they closed the factory, and they actually shut down that factory in Martinsburg, West Virginia. So Corningware is no longer made. And once that factory closed, it was always my quest to find a ceramic material that would do that would actually work better than Corningware, because the original Corningware was very durable, except, Merrill, when you cook with it, the product would have a tendency to stick because the ceramic material was designed for the space industry where it would reflect heat and not absorb heat. And when you cook on top of the stove, you want to use cookware that will absorb the heat to help it heat up faster and be a better conductor of heat. This ceramic material that I found in my travels throughout the world is the only material of its kind that you can use on top of the stove up to 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit. And steel, you can melt steel at about 2,100 degrees Fahrenheit. So this has a better melting point than steel. It'll take more heat than stainless steel or aluminum or cast iron, but it's also non-toxic. Anytime you cook in metal cookware, you have a tendency, depending upon the grade of cookware, you can leach. Heavy metal can be leached into your food. It can be aluminum, it could be iron, it could be nickel, it could be chromium, it could be lead and cadmium. All of those metals can be leached into your food. Ceramic is the only material that's non-porous and contains no metal. So that's why our cookware is so different than metal cookware. Metal cookware is designed to be very durable in a restaurant trade so people can bang the pots and they don't have to worry about them breaking, but metal cookware will not make your food taste better. The only cookware that will make your food taste better is ceramic cookware because it doesn't leach any heavy metals or any toxicity into the food.
So actually it's made, we're looking at made from clay, is that what you would?
Yeah, it's basically, you know, when I don't know if you've ever been to a foundry where they smelt, where they make iron ore and metal and stainless steel, but it's very toxic to the environment, and it takes a lot of fuel, you know, whether it's coal-fired plant or gas or oil-fired plant, but it's very toxic to the environment. When you make our material, it's basically made of Earth's minerals, natural minerals that are found in the Earth's crust, and water, and that's basically, it's a mixture of clay and water, and then we use gas-fired, natural gas-fired kilns in our factory, so there's no pollution whatsoever involved in the making of our product, and if you should happen to, and if it ends up in a landfill, you don't have to worry about it being toxic to the landfill because it's just natural minerals.
So, but there is, it then has enamel on it, is that what?
No. It has a nano glaze. It is a ceramic glaze that is on the material. It's a natural ceramic glaze that makes this product non-porous, and so, you know, food won't stick to it.
Oh, so but if I'm just kind of like, you know, I'm what's going on in my head is the movie Ghost, you know, where
mm-hmm.
she's sitting around in there. Oh, my love, my darling, and, you know, she's making the, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Right, yep.
Yeah. I mean, is that the kind of thing, and you're taking that and putting it into, is that what it is? I mean, from, like, the scratch, if you're looking
at it. Well, yeah, it's just made from clay and minerals, and remember, this mixture that we use took 20 years to develop. The inventor was Peter Hsu out of Taiwan. It took him 20 years to invent this, and we fire at extremely high temperatures, up over 2,500 to 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit, which makes this into a solid mass. So that's what makes it so unique and so different than any other type of cookware out there being sold anywhere in the United States or anywhere in the world.
Wow. Now, I tried, I've been using the little pot on what to, I don't know what to call it.
It's that 16-ounce saucepan?
Yes.
Yes.
With all the measurements inside.
Yes.
But
yes.
I've been really testing it. I've been really testing that out on the not baking, but on the stove top. And it's interesting how I'm finding, I love the nonstick part when I'm cleaning it.
Yes.
But what I'm finding is that, if it's really stuck on, I just let it sit and, have some water in there for a little while before I start scrubbing. But I've never had to use, steel wool, something as abrasive.
But you could. You could. You can't. You cannot scratch this surface. If you took a knife and you tried to scrape, if you had, a lot of people use Teflon pots, and they use metal spatulas or turners with the Teflon. What happens is they actually scrape that Teflon off. But that's another subject, because Teflon is not something I would recommend anybody to use on their cookware, because if you heat it over 500 degrees Fahrenheit, it emits a POFA gas, which can be toxic to your immune system. So Teflon is okay, but if you heat Teflon up very high, it has a tendency to break down. But if you use a metal spatula or any kind of kitchen tools on metal cookware with any kind of coating, it can flake off, but you can. If you took a metal turner or a knife of any kind and tried to scratch the surface of our ceramic cookware, you would actually dull the knife and you would take the metal, because the ceramic in its solid state is stronger than steel, meaning that it'll actually wear down the point of a knife if you scraped it on our surface, and it will leave a metal mark on the ceramic, because the ceramic is a harder surface than metal.
What I found, by the way, and now today I happened, this morning I made oatmeal.
Yes.
And then I didn't take it then and then put it in, in the sink and then put water in it immediately. And so later on I was about to clean it and I saw it's like the oatmeal was sticking to it. And I went, all right, let me just put a little water in here while I wash the other dishes. And then I went back to it and used, again, a non-abrasive pad. I guess you know which kind
I
mean.
Yes.
And came right off. It was very easy to clean.
And you could also put this in the microwave. You can put it in the dishwasher. You can put it in the freezer. You can put it in the refrigerator. And you could also bring it to the table. One thing what I learned with all my 23 years of experience with Corning is that product was designed to go from the freezer to the table to the oven. He actually had a jingle about that, but you wouldn't do that. People are not advised to store any of their foods in metal when they're putting that in a refrigerator, or you wouldn't bring a cast iron pot to the, or stainless steel, 5.5-quart pot of pasta to the kitchen, to the dining room table. You would put that in a more of an attractive vessel, preferably either something in porcelain or our CeramCore material, because it's ceramic and non-porous. It lends itself to being as attractive on the table as it is on the stove, so you save energy and also waste by not having to use another vessel to cook and serve. And you could do it all in one pot and not have to worry about how attractive it looks on the table, because our cookware will look so attractive on the table.
The ones I got are brown. Do they come in colors or just?
They right now the best performing material. And I'm going to use a technical term that a lot of people in this country aren't that familiar with, but it far infrared energy, and the material that we use and that black color that our ceramic cookware is made of generates far infrared energy waves, and that's the best way to communicate what that is. If you go outside on a summer day or a cold winter day and you feel that heat from the sun, that's far infrared energy, and it'll actually permeate the layers of your skin. On a cold winter day, if you're out skiing up in a ski slope, you'll start to perspire because that's far infrared energy. You can't see it, but you can feel it, and it goes deep into your skin. Well, that's the same thing that our cookware does. When you cook with our cookware, and you say you're cooking a hamburger on our 10-inch skillet, it generates energy waves that will cook the food from the inside and the outside at the same time. If you are using a metal cookware, cast iron or stainless steel, the heating surface, that's the only part of the food that would cook. The heat is the surface that the hamburger is laying on. You're actually burning the food from the outside in, very similar to when you're grilling outside. So this far infrared energy, which is coming from the Eastern culture, from Asia, is designed to make the food taste better because it seals in the juices of the food while you're cooking, and it doesn't take as long to cook. So we could actually make this statement that food cooked in our cookware will taste far better than food cooked in anybody else's cookware. And see, chefs on TV, they like to show off their recipes and how they cook, but they can never say that the cookware they're using, even though they may endorse it, their cookware is not going to make the food taste better. It may cook faster, it may look nice, but only our cookware can actually, we're the only people that can make that statement that food cooked in our cookware will actually taste better and make you a better cook.
Well, I did experiment with that, what you said.
Mm-hmm.
As it turned out, I only had to like cut in half, maybe. I put a chicken breast in that little pot, that poor little pot. You're gonna have to get me a skillet.
Yes, we will. We are. We know. We've been completely sold out from Christmas, so we're getting a big shipment in the end of this week. So that'll make our customers happy.
And what I put in was the chicken breast. It was like frozen.
Yes.
And I put it in there, and I didn't add anything, no salt, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just put the little cover on it and let it, on a low flame and just let it cook. And I was very surprised. First of all, I was expecting it to take a lot longer because it was frozen. And I figured it would have, no taste or whatever. And it was very interesting to actually taste the piece of chicken in its own with its own flavor,
yeah,
and nothing else, and so that was
wow.
That was great for me, especially being on a diet. And if I'm trying to lose weight,
yes,
usually I'm adding salt to everything. I didn't even
yes.
I was very surprised. I didn't have to add. So I did this also. I think I also did this with a piece of. With a piece of salmon, just for the heck of it, and the same thing. It was the flavor of the protein. It just comes through.
Excellent.
I mean, probably putting sauces and things like that makes it a different taste, makes it
yes.
prettier, makes it
mm-hmm.
All kinds of things. But that's really great. It's I think is a great product.
I'm glad you like it. It took us a long time to develop this product, and we're not selling this product on traditional, brick and mortar retailers. They seem to only be interested in selling metal cookware. So we're really selling this product. There's some very good retailers on our you can find on our website, and also Mercola.com, which has been a big supporter of our product, and Chef's Resource, which is an internet company. We seem to be doing very well selling directly to the consumer, because on the internet we can post a lot of the information about our product. We're in a retail store. They don't have sales clerks anymore, so if our product was on the shelf, it'd be very difficult for the consumer to understand the features and benefits of our product. But it seems the people that are interested in this product are highly educated. They want a healthy lifestyle. They want to get away from toxicity. They're into the environment. They're into green products, and they're looking for different alternatives, non-toxic alternatives for cooking. And that's the people that seem to be finding us on the website. So we've really been blessed.
So Ceramicore is the company, but Extrema
is the product.
Is the product, the cookware product.
Yes.
And I guess if you go to, what is ceramicore.com?
Yeah, it's www.ceramcore.com, ceramcore.com, and that'll take you right to our website, and it'll list the retailers where you can buy online or you can buy directly from us.
Okay. Now, before I let you go,
yes.
you plug your kid. Give him a plug.
A plug?
Yeah, give him a plug.
Give him a plug. Well, you know, it's been a real blessing to work with a product, something that I dreamed of, to really bring a product to the American consumer.
Talking about your son playing in the...
Oh, my son basketball?
Yeah, come on, give him a plug.
Well, we're in the county players. My son Alex, he's 6'6" junior, and we're playing against Point Pleasant Beach tomorrow. And if we can win this game, we're going to play the number 2 seed in Ocean and Monmouth County. So I hope we have a good game. I love him very much. And regardless of the outcome, he's still number 1 in my books.
Okay.
All right.
Now he has his 5 minutes of fame.
Yes, he does.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we got him in.
Oh, there you go. Well, I appreciate that, Merle.
Sure. All right. So I'll see you at the show.
Yeah, I look forward to meeting you.
On the 25th,
We'll spend some time together. I'll show you some of our new products, and thank you very much for your kind words.
It's great. I love getting a product that, you know, that works. That's, you know what I mean?
I understand. God bless you.
All right. Take care. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So it's Ceramicore versus Ceramicore. And so before I Leslie calls in, it's time for a song. This past weekend. Oh, it was 2 days ago. How time flies. I saw Al Jarreau and Ashford and Simpson at Nokia Theater on Broadway. And this is not him live, but I guess this is one of Al's songs.
That we love to sing. Every time we hear the music and feel it's this love together, we got the kind that lasts forever. Gets sweeter all the time.
Yeah, that we're in this love together, Al Jarreau. But now, what's up, Doc?
Hey, how you doing?
Okay. Well, I put up on here, just so for reference, the Saturday and Sunday schedule of the clinic. So when we talk about it, I know what the hell I'm talking about. I mean, you
all righty?
All right. So first, I want you to explain not what the clinic was necessarily, but what was your part? What did you have to do regarding the JPD clinic?
Okay. Are you still there?
Yeah. What was your part in it?
Okay, so my part, you want to know now or you want to wait?
No, go ahead.
My part in JPD was I was the site administrator, so the NFL every year asks the team to appoint one person as the site administrator. And we had a staff meeting out in the Hamptons in August and right after last year's season. And we just sort of, rehashed what our plan was for this year and, came up with new ideas. And I signed on thinking, hey, that'll be a great idea. And then I soon found that it was quite a bit of work. My job was to basically recruiting, contacting schools in the area, talking with, responding to individual requests that came in online, and then taking on I talked to the Public Schools Athletic League, the Girl Scouts, really trying to branch out and create a network of schools and kids sports organizations that we can go to, not just this year, but years into the future. So and I'm also trying to set up a database of names and addresses of girls that are interested in sports so that we can, keep going back to them year to year, get their sort of references to other girls for the clinic. And then organization of the clinic was mostly done by the coach as far as, what was going to be coached. But I had to make sure that registration was on point and making sure everyone knew where they were going, posting signs, just general organization of staff, making sure the buses came together, the food, and then, some of the other things other people helped with. But in general, all the details came down to me.
Which was fabulous. thank God you're on our staff.
I didn't know what to do after this last week. I've been kind of sitting around thinking, okay, well, there's a whole lot of nothing going on now. That was so much energy expended, and now silence,
yeah.
You know.
That's okay. I'll give you – we still have something we got to get done. But before we talk about that, I want to get into – because you coached as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk about what did you do? Like, what did you do?
What the basic, we just...
Yeah, in other words, like, I'm looking at this thing, like, on the first day, and it says, like, there was, like, life skills.
Uh-huh. I was assigned a life skill. I think four different coaches, two a day, were assigned a life skill. Mine was goal setting and responsibility. So, I would say I probably spent about an hour researching that and putting together a talk, and then I kind of on the fly on the way there decided to use the illustration of six of the coaches as a human pyramid to illustrate my point, which was if everyone doesn't have the same goal, then you can't, achieve. No one is able to achieve the goal if you're not together as a team, so everyone has to take their goal on responsibly. And then, I gave a little talk on that, and then we went into the coaching, and I was partnered up with one of the line women, Nikki Joseph,
mm-hmm.
And I think we must have been, eight different teams this year, eight to nine different teams. Everything was done so quickly, and then we were just kind of split up, and I wanted to keep the energy up, so I don't know exactly how many teams, but we started with footwork. And then the basics of that for different positions. And then we moved on to, since everyone has to throw a lot during the clinic back and forth, moved on to how to hold the ball, how to throw the ball, how to catch the ball.
Now, what does it mean, by the way, place on table? What is that?
Oh, when you place the ball on the table, it's like you have an imaginary table in front of you. So you sort of get in the basic football stance, legs shoulder width apart, sort of sink down, you bend your knees a bit. back straight, and then you have your hands out in front of you as if you're placing the ball on a table. So that would be, if you see a quarterback, quarterback bends down to get the ball from the center.
Right.
When you don't have a center in front of you, you sort of, that's a, we say table, so that gives them the image that there's something in front of them, that they're putting it on a table, so that for each movement you have a visual image that then you you facilitate with your body.
So in other words, it helps with the process.
Yeah.
So first we after the we went, that's the stances that we, that was the first thing that that you went into.
Yep.
And then I guess the then after the next thing looked like catching, that you learn how to catch the ball.
Mm-hmm. Showing hand placement, different you know, the standard way to place your hands and to kind of cushion the throw when it comes into your body so it doesn't just bounce off of your hands.
Okay.
And did a few drills associated with that, how to catch it, you know, to the side, above, straight in front of you, down by the ground, keeping your feet underneath you always. We build the drills, basically. They all come from those stances. And
mm-hmm.
they're built and taught so that they, each one builds on itself. So, of course, your feet are the first thing in touch with the earth or with the field. And that's where all of your power comes from. That's where each position has a specific set of foot movements. So we start with the basic stance and then a few movements out of that stance, so that we start with that repetition, so that the body will remember it, hopefully. And you know, of course, we're doing so much in 2 days, but without teaching that properly, it makes some of the movements harder to do, you know, some of the other skills. When you start combining things that have to do with your hands, or, you know, whether it be reading an offense or a defense, because you're going to have so much piled on top of that, so you sort of build from the ground up.
And then I think the next thing, I guess, was throwing then.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need to have a good arm to throw, or can you learn how to throw football anyway?
No, definitely. Throwing, I think it's all about repetition. I mean, I was taught to throw when I was very, very young, and it's something that, you know, there's a little bit of flexibility involved with the joints in your arm that
right.
help you to throw better, because you're using your arm sort of as a, when you're doing it properly, you're really using your body as a whip, and right from your footwork and then powering through your hip and then down through your fingertips, it all works together. But when you first start out, it's really more about how you hold the ball is the first thing. And I noticed that was the hardest thing for the girls to get used to, was just, you know, just holding the ball in a position that became instinctive for their hand. They didn't even have to look at it. That was hard for them. And I kept having to go back and say, now, take a look at how you're holding the ball. How are you holding it? And they had, a lot of them had absolutely no idea, which really confounded me, because I just have had a football in my hand since I was two. So,
yeah.
You know, it was, I thought, how could you not, you know, instinctively know? But, you know, of course, if you haven't ever been taught something.
Right.
Yeah. So really how you hold it, and then how you follow through and flicking your wrist at the end to get that spiral, and how to get kind of your weight behind the ball. I think you can get a pretty good throw out of most, you know, generally healthy, strong, you know, girls
mm-hmm.
if they throw it correctly.
Now, as you were doing this, the coaching, did you get to notice, like, for instance, there were that kids that the girls, like, obviously you said never, some who have never actually handled a football before,
mm-hmm.
And to what point? In other words, you think there were, from your experience of it, maybe somebody who never was even on a team of anything or never played a sport? Or
oh, certainly,
think...
certainly.
So
yes,
yeah.
I had. I would say there's probably one or two girls on the team that I coached that possibly had never touched a football in their life or never taken part in a team sport like this. And
wow.
Yeah, it was. I was wondering, oh well, maybe you were tricked into being here, because I thought, wow, good for you. That takes a lot of courage to do.
Sure.
A sport like football, to come out and, even if it's not contact, I remember in high school being pretty intimidated by the girls on the softball team. The coach wanted me to play softball. I had grown up, I'd played in some city leagues, but I was an actress, so I took part in plays all year long, so I didn't have any time to play any sports in high school except for my freshman year. And I remember when I got to my senior year, those girls were pretty intimidating, so I thought, wow, these girls that aren't in sport culture in school or in their community, hats off to them for showing up, because it was, they really came out and didn't, they did very, very well. I was extremely impressed with them.
Right. So
they didn't lag far behind. They lacked a little bit of maybe the killer instincts that some people have with sports, but I think part of that killer instinct is confidence that you have in your abilities.
Sure. I think then the next thing, I guess you were doing, they were like just kind of like throwing, like teams sort of to complete passes.
Mm-hmm.
They got into that. I just want to kind of say that it was the first time that I've been to the JPD program.
Mm-hmm.
And watching it, I have to say I was amazed, because it was like seeing it from just the one day, the progress was amazing to see from a point of just some exercises and whatever,
mm-hmm.
To the point of actually they're now playing a game. They really did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean it was really great. Did you start like get a sense of when they went into like a team? Did you get a sense of like who would be best to be the quarterback and things like that?
Well, with our team, I mean, I noticed that very quickly on the team that I was coaching when I was coaching with Nikki, that the philosophy that we sort of developed together was really try to let them take on what roles that they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a day for fun, we wanted to make sure that they didn't feel this pressure to win.
Right.
We wanted them to feel like football was fun and something that they would want to do again.
Yeah,
because so
I got there was really no, there wasn't any like, there wasn't any awards or anything given.
No, we didn't really tally the scores or
between
the teams, or there wasn't a contest to see who won the most games.
Right.
There wasn't anything like that. For us, we set some small goals as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And we just decided that I'm a defensive player, even though I play receiver sometimes, but Nikki's also pretty much all-time defense.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that mindset, so I think we somehow naturally distilled that into our players, and they really did better on defense than they did on offense. No surprise. But I think that we just, our enthusiasm for defense, we gave that to them, and we our goal as a team became, we're going to have the best defense. And they didn't mind that they really couldn't put together a ton of offense. It was when it came to defense, they really had a lot of pride in that, and they put together some great stands, and I saw the most team spirit coming out of that one goal. And I thought that was plenty. That was enough for just a two-day clinic. Now, I mean, as a competitor, it was hard for me not to say, okay, well, Nikki, why don't you do defense, since you do it all the time, and since I'm on the offense sometimes, I'll do offense, and then we'll have the best team, and we'll win this thing. I had a hard time not putting that. The first day, I felt a little bit overwhelmed. I thought, oh, no, we're not going to get together this complete team. But then as I relaxed a little bit, I thought, that's not the focus of this. It isn't to teach them everything in 2 days. It's let them walk away with a good feeling and have fun, and I would really... My wish for all of them is that they walk away playing football, that they will get together with their girlfriends and say, hey, let's throw a football around.
Yeah.
And not think that it's strange or butch or anything like that, that it's just like throwing a, going out and shooting hoops. So a lot of girls do that.
When I was, it's funny, when I was growing up, I lived in the projects, which was a good thing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so... we're always dealing with sports all the time. And our big thing was to play punch ball. That was the game we played.
Mm-hmm.
Then the guys went off someplace. Oh, I have to put you on speaker. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Okay. It's going to make a noise. Okay. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So with punch ball, I mean, it was still the kind of sport, and it was usually co-ed kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it got everybody into playing, you know, a nice sport. I don't know that I would have played football. I have no idea if I would have gotten involved with that, had
mm-hmm.
that come up for whether it was just throwing a ball around. But the thing I want to, what we're going to look at with this whole thing next is getting reactions from the girls. Like, oh, I'm wanting to find out. I think you said you're going to be able to look into it or to email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I put together, I'm just putting together, you know, a large Excel document with all of the girls in it. And now I've been able to get a hold of some records of girls from past clinics. And so that's just an awful lot of data entry to put in their contact information. But I want to send out some emails, and then at some point I'm trying to decide if I'm going to do phone calls or, send out some sort of a mailing to those that don't have emails. But I would really like to, make sure that they have a voice so that they, not only that we get information, but for them to say, oh, you know, I want to reflect on this, maybe what it meant to me now that it's fresh in their minds. I can't wait too long because...
Yeah.
I think it'll just sort of fade away, and they're on to the next thing. So,
right. Yeah.
But I would like to get
a
response from them.
Yeah, because I think we want to be able to show what the results is, and not just because we say it, but
mm-hmm.
out of the mouths of babes, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I sent out an email to the staff members, all of the coaches, and I heard back from a couple of them, and they had said, a lot of them had seconded what my reaction that I got from one of the girls on the bus that rode home with me. She said, we should do this every weekend. You know, why don't you guys just do this every weekend? And then, you know, different girls can come and other girls can come other weekends. Meanwhile, I could barely sit up straight because I was so tired.
Leslie, the show is going to end in about a minute, so I'm going to talk to you later because I think... we want to continue with this next week, on next week's show.
Okay.
Okay? So
sure.
I appreciate you calling in and talking to us about this. And as I said, we'll talk next week.
That sounds good.
Okay? All right.
All right,
have a great evening.
You too. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Yep. Sorry about that. Yes, and we're ending the show right now. Want to get into
Come in here. Say hello to everyone. Say goodbye to everyone.